It does not merely operate among individuals alone, it can also be collective and operate among groups, such as families, tribes and whole peoples. But this fate is self-created. It is not imposed upon them arbitrarily by any outward power. The fortunes or misfortunes of a country are not wholly due to the capacity or foolishness of those who govern it. They are partly the reflection of the capacity or foolishness of the people themselves. We must epilogue. The philosophic life always keep in mind that either in the past or the present both the people and the rulers of the country helped to create, often unconsciously, the causes and conditions which reach their climax with open sufferings. Until a transformation in their way of thinking occurs, they will have to face intermittent recurrence of conflicts, with the consequent sufferings. Nevertheless, it is an inescapable duty of administrators, who are set by self or circumstance in a position to lead, control and influence people, to fit themselves for it. So long as their own mind is confused and bewildered and they are unable to put themselves in the position of posterity and gaze at our age through the telescope of time, so long is it impossible for them to guide or govern others aright. The mastery of philosophy, the study of its liberating thoughts, will help them to drive correctly instead of drifting wrongly. These are hard words, but bursting bombs and grinding calamities have begun to burst the illusions of men and to grind to dust the lies under which they lived. The world crisis provokes the gloom of disillusionment and brings the stirrings of dissatisfaction to a head. It is worth remembering that philosophy appeared in Greece at a time when, as Socrates said, there seemed nothing to be done except crouch behind the wall until the storm passes by. It is wrong thinking that has ruined and wrecked Europe. It is right thinking that can redeem it. The present state of Europe is but an expression of what concentrated and unbridled emotion, whether for good or evil, can achieve. The racial antipathies and economic antagonisms, the nationalistic hatreds and militaristic horrors of our woeful planet bear terrible witness to the fact that we have forgotten the high business for which we are here on Earth. The business of making our personal lives disclose something of that which is their fundamental reality, the business of breaking the ancient illusion that the ego is our only self and the body our only existence. We might well become sad at the thought of thoughtless mankind, attending to every concern except this first and fundamental one, if we did not know that suffering was itself a tutor. The world has trod its via dolorosa and learnt bitter truths from the breaking down of what it has built with deluded mind. A great war telescopes several decades into one, bringing about forced changes in men and their minds, in society and its systems. Calamity creates wisdom and forces people into the wiser path they ought to have travelled willingly. Thus their painful sufferings and disappointed strivings breed wisdom. War strips them of their smug complacency, stabs their frailties and comes as a grim the hidden stretching beyond yoga corrective. The great wars which give us personal gloom give us also mental awakenings. The compensation of chaos and war are the new ideas they generate. The revolutions in historical events usually play the part of a prelude to the revelations in men's minds. It is a mistake to regard adversity as being always an adversary. It may sometimes be a friend in disguise. It is true that the study of the theory of philosophy does not flourish during crises, nevertheless the practice of it does. For then its students can show the benefits of their attainment and understanding. Then they can display how unflurried and unperturbed they are amid all trials and how sure and decisive when called to posts of responsibility and judgment. Then their thought can rest in the quiet inner citadel whilst their body acts energetically and fearlessly amid the grave terrific stresses outside. We become unnerved at the outbreak of war and begin to see that life is largely transient, afflicted by disappointments and pain-laden. Ordinarily people do not observe this instability of existence, do not see that everything is either altering or vanishing continuously. But the contemporary period, with its characteristics of high speed and sudden surprise so well exemplified in its history moving overnight, has begun to make this evident. Such suffering is educative and brings thoughts into our head which would not otherwise have arisen. The instability of sensual existence and the successiveness of personal life are sharply brought home to us and thus our narrow egoistic outlook is diminished, that is purified through the arisle of a yearning to find something more stable, unchanging and lasting. This yearning can only be satisfied in the quests of reality other than merely material existence. When we become conscious of our weakness, we begin to search for a fresh source of inner strength. When we realize that we are unable to order life right, we commence to take up the quest of its meaning. When we discover that we have been deceived by appearances, we are ready to learn something about reality. This war teaches us in the severest possible manner the transiency of all things. Let us therefore ask ourselves what this means. Where is the fine house which has been shattered to pieces, the beloved child slain, the modest fortune lost? What are they today? Only memories which seem like vivid dreams. But what are memories? Mental constructions, that is thoughts. What will these things be in the future? Thoughts. If therefore we have the courage to complete the logical circle, then we are forced to conclude that something which is purely mental both in the past and the future must have epilogue, the philosophic life been purely mental in that which rests upon both, the present. Thus mentalism is being silently taught by the vicissitudes of life to ordinary and philosophic folk. We can keep calmer and saner amid the terrors of our time if we keep to the truth of mentalism. If we regard these terrors as experiences whose stuff is ultimately as mental as the stuff of dreams. And just as men who have bad dreams and fearful nightmares suffer most when they are deluded into clinging to the reality of their experiences, but will suffer least if they could know that they are dreaming and let go their delusion, so we too may modify our physical sufferings by remaining awake to the truth that they are all ideas which come and are felt indeed but will also vanish as they came. The philosopher, more than any other comma, can show a path to other men at a time when they are bewildered and when the whole world is at crossroads. There is always a way of liberation. It is the way of repentance and return. Nothing seems simpler, yet nothing seems so hard. But another way there is not. And the way of unloosed suffering is still harder to tread. However, it is not untrue that the night is darkest before dawn. We have been living through an unforgettable period. Here is history in the making, with all its terrific drama and all its tragic interest. For our age is transitional. Its very uniqueness prepares the way for a unique renaissance. The ravages of the war will need to be repaired. We must learn to meet bad times with better thoughts. We must struggle for a new era characterized by heartfelt universality. It is for us to spell the riddle of the future with letters drawn from the alphabet of the present. It is for us to evaluate the movements disclosed by history and follow it sign logic. It is for us to draw wise lessons out of the vanished centuries for our own ethical guidance and material profit. First and foremost of these lessons is that we are living at the end of a cycle when karma is closing all the national accounts, clearing up mass arrears. We stand and watch the disappearance of an era. The circle is being completed. The monuments of the old world are toppling. This transition must necessarily be one of confused outlooks, convulsive ferment and contending ideals, or rebellious emotions and fanatic feelings. Second and easiest of these lessons is that a stupendous process of swift change is going on before our eyes, such as no people has the hidden stretching beyond yoga ever before witnessed. The practical import of this is that although society should certainly be stable, it should also be flexible. A fossil is also stable, but it is not flexible. The lesson of countries like China is that when the law of change is ignored, suffering comes. The dualism between these two forces, stability and change, will always persist, but the art of reconciling them must always be practiced. In times like the present, a deliberate emphasis must be placed on the aspect of change. This does not imply that sudden and violent revolutionary changes are advocated. Revolution for its own brutal sake is the principle of unbalanced emotions and distorted minds. A mystical belief in the coming of a millennium lurks behind every fervid and furious revolution, yet has never been historically realized. Whoever uses wrong methods thereby ruins right aims. Whoever abuses freedom asks for restraint. For he cuts short the period of human adolescence in trying to make too much haste and thus infects society with a fearful psychological disease, hatred. On the other hand, Whoever fails to recognize the time spirit, which is one of iconoclastic renovation proceeding at an accelerated pace, and foolishly resists it, will resist it at his peril. There are various ways of bringing about social improvement. There is the way of suddenly beating your neighbor on the head, which is the way of revolution. There is the alternative of persuading him to bring a more rational and less self-centered mode of thought to bear upon social problems, which is the way of reason. Both unreflective revolutionary and prudent reasoner may be motivated by the same concept of a better world. But the two trends are antagonistic and must inevitably clash. It is perfectly possible for men everywhere to have a finer and fairer existence. The attitude of constructive service and unselfish cooperation will meet all needs. But if it is absent, if men's desires conflict with fate's designs, there will then arise the misery of unnecessary strife. It therefore behoves all men to adapt themselves to these irresistible changes or suffer for their stupidity. The stubborn reiteration of loyalties that pertain to a disappearing past is meaningless. It is for those in authority to realize that iconoclastic forces are at work abrogating old dispensations, that new ideas are fermenting and that a new, noble and generous outlook is required of them. Let us not bemoan the passing of that which has outserved its time. The roaring imperious tide of the 20th century cannot be restrained. It must be given its way, but it need not be permitted to destroy what is worthwhile in our inheritance. The commingling of keen thought epilogue, the philosophic life with courageous action will bring tremendous possibilities. Let us envisage the integration of the highest ideals of Orient and Occident, of the union of their two streams of discovery, one coming from the farthest antiquity and the other from the freshest science. Meanwhile, we must keep our sanity. If we abandon all the cultural heritage of religion, mysticism, philosophy, ethics, ideals and intuitions which has come down to us from our forefathers, we are making a terrible mistake. For we abandon the most priceless elements of human existence. Let us simplify and purify this heritage if we wish. Let us sift sound doctrine from superstitious belief. But let us not forget that existence ultimately turns to ash and dust when it holds none of the inner serenity of a good life and inner support of a true one, which are needed more than ever by our bewildered epoch. Can we not see in the awful position of the world woe's victims of forced asceticism, an involuntary and undesired renunciation, a compulsory giving up of every desired thing, person, attachment? Can we not see in the sudden impoverishment of once wealthy seats of empire like London and Paris a constrained self-mortification and a coerced putting on of sackcloth and ashes? Can we not see that if millions have been beggared, if all this means anything at all in a larger sense, it means that humanity is being passed against its own will through a purifying process on a scale previously unknown in history? Can we not also see that the financial avalanche which swept away the life savings of millions of Americans in is of the same piece? Are we not all being taught that the earth is but a camping ground and not an eternal home? Is it not plain that what the sage learns through profound reflection and voluntary self-denial, the peasant and the townsman are being made to learn through the bitterest misfortunes and the direct losses, that nothing is to become the focus of our whole being save the aspiration towards truth, life, meaning, reality, the kingdom of heaven in Jesus Lord's, which are all within us? The sage has sought and found his basic happiness in the mind. W. Thich is his inalienable possession and of which no catastrophe can rob him. Everywhere we perceive that mankind is being blindly driven to seek in the same direction because all else has begun to fail it. This does not mean that wealth is to be ascetically spurned, property to be thrown away and money mentioned only with hypocritical horror. Such an attitude is right for the monk but not for the man of wisdom. What it does mean is that we may accumulate wealth if we wish to, possess property and estimate the usefulness of money, love and family and friends, but the hidden stretching beyond yoga the moment we permit these things to absorb our whole mind and take up our whole time, so that we have neither mind nor time to give to the quest of understanding what we are here for, then they become a disguised curse and a source of latent suffering. Not that we need war to shrive our spirits and purge our hearts. Life DH its changing panorama of thought and deed. its endless personal struggles, is always assisting us likewise. But often war is the visible climax of graded periods of the cosmic struggle between the selfless and selfish tendencies in man's outlook, between whatever works towards unity and whatever works towards disintegration. Meanwhile, humanity will rise to higher and higher conceptions of what constitutes evil, dropping its narrower outlooks and ancient brutalities with deepening shame. The horrors of bloody war will disappear and soldiers will throw aside their steel helmets when the beast in man is tamed, but the conflict of minds will replace it. Struggle must continue while the world lasts, but it will gradually be refined, modified, dignified and purged of its physical brutality. We must therefore admit with Socrates, evil, O Glaucon, will not vanish from the earth. How should it, if it is the name of the imperfection through whose defeat the perfect types acquire their value? And with Buddha, struggle there must be, for all life is a struggle of some kind. But Buddha also pointed out that the conflict in Elgf is not really between good and evil but between knowledge and ignorance. We must remember that the sages refuse to recognize evil as a positive independent existence but place it in the limited view of the man who believes in it. Our task is to learn wisdom from all experience, from pain as from pleasure, from cruelty as from kindness, and to express in the arena of everyday life just what we have learned. In this way, everything that happens gives us a better foothold for future living. Fourth and last of the lessons we may draw is that intelligence, adequately sharpened, courageously accepted and selflessly applied, is always the dominant factor in the end. Those who worship force rather than brains as the highest social power should take a lesson from the calm perspective of history. If force were the greatest thing known, the gigantic dinosaur would be king of this world, and the prehistoric monsters would have inherited the earth long ago. Yet how many herds of these animals have gone with the years and left no heirs? They have died out and disappeared. Why? Because there is something greater than mere force. That something is thought. Man, puny animal that he was in comparison with these giants, conquered them all. He did it not by force, but by brains. Their epilogue, the philosophic life, no limit to what he shall be able to do when he shall have fully harnessed this wondrous power of thought, so little understood though it be. Science is only a stage in this growth. There are those who have become afraid of it because they have become afraid of what scientific war has done to man. But science is only a sword. With it you may pierce through your problems or pierce through your throat. Whatever you do, the responsibility lies with yourself, not with the sword. Intelligence blossoms as the flower of well-reasoned thought and it matures gradually into the fruit of spontaneous insight. That which begins in the primitive savage as a glimmer of purely local inquisitiveness ends in the evolved man as a passion for consummate understanding of all existence. The innumerable lives on earth which intervene between both are but lessons in the school of intelligence. When intelligence is only partial, immature and incomplete, it teaches man cunning, selfishness and materialism. When full, mature and perfect, it teaches him wisdom, selflessness and truth. Thus we return to the central thought that the world's greatest need is not the discovery of a new scientific marvel or a new momentary pleasure, but the discovery of a new understanding of life. It is not enough to seek things which complicate existence, it must also be comprehended. We must make up our minds whether we wish to learn this truth through the pain which succeeds folly or through the peace which succeeds philosophy. We who have wandered this queer planet and kept its lessons at heart know inwardly that neither the peaceful, primitive settings of nature in the colorful Orient nor the noisy, metropolitan complexities of man in the colorless Occident constitute our true home. We know that the latter lies in a remote place to which no rolling steamer, no puffing engine, no creaking bullock cart could ever bear us. For it lies in the infinitude of the unpathed over self. The restoration of philosophy to its honored place in the world of living men rather than dead ones has yet to come. After all, the world's search is not for men who must die but for truths which will live. Philosophy will gather a few votaries because it is our belief that it can be made intelligible to any intelligent man, even if he has never previously studied it, although it cannot be made intelligible to any highly egoistic man because, being nothing but a human bundle of prejudices, he cannot care for truth. The ego is a needle through whose eye the camel of truth cannot contrive to squeeze its way. And truth is the proper target of all genuine philosophy. Egoism and illusion are all that philosophy deprives us the hidden stretching beyond yoga of, but in return it assuredly proffers much. The poet will see the radiance of the sunset but ignore the atmospheric conditions that cause it. The scientist will see the atmospheric conditions and ignore the radiance. The philosopher will see both atmospheric change and vivid radiance and something more which neither poet nor scientist knows, for he will know how to live amid the deceptive flux of the evanescent in the fixed serenity of the real. The philosopher is he who has come to the understanding of himself, whilst his philosophy is his ordinary experience of the world come to the understanding of itself. The fact that we close this modern restatement of an ancient doctrine leaving loose ends of thought and discovery, that we have loosened the knot of the world problem but have not untied it, should not mislead its readers into impatient judgment upon its contents. For there are no loose ends in the hidden philosophy. Everything is perfectly tied, and he who can master it will possess a finished attitude of mind. Meanwhile, the groundwork for the teachings of the final volume of this work, with which we shall humbly endeavor to ascend intellectually the highest peaks of human thought, has now been prepared. The basis upon which the superstructure of ultimate truth may be reared has now been laid down. Correct comprehension of those higher tenets, which are reserved with regret, will cast a powerful searchlight upon mankind's most perplexing riddles, such as, what is this mystery of mind? What is the meaning of death? What is God? What is man? Why has nature given us dream and sleep, and so on? Let us not lose ourselves in despair because the world seems so bad. It is slowly coming of age amid apparent retrogression and periodic lapses. Its marred childhood draws to an inevitable end before our eyes, its agonies are but the throes of adolescent change. Those of us who have glimpsed both man and life beneath the surface can remain steady and affirm, with American Emerson, that the age of the quadruped is to go out. The age of the brain and of the fiat coming. If we have been witnessing the woes of an epoch struggling in its death grapple, we are also about to witness the arisal of a new era where a humane life for human beings may be more possible. We may honestly nourish the conviction that, amid all the constant alternations of ethical stagnation and awakening during mankind's long and painful journey from ignorance to truth, goodwill must prevail in the end, not merely because we want to console ourselves, but because the fundamental principle of life is epilogue, the philosophic life for 7,000 years at least according to the modern Histophian's reckoning. But for double that period according to ours, the Sphinx has squatted before the Egyptian desert, propounding its riddle to the unheeding ears of mankind in a silence as profound as that of Christ's when he stood in the court before Pilate with the shadow of a ghastly cross over him. What is truth? Asked the Roman governor, thus echoing man's most perennial question. Did Christ know? Yet he did not answer. His lips did not move. But his eyes fixed themselves on those of Pilate's throughout that awed silence. What he could not reveal by lip and tongue, for it transcends both, none else can reveal. But the road that leads to such sublime realization may be mapped out for the ardent seeker. Unto this difficult endeavor an eager pen and white waiting pages have been humbly dedicated. This quality of the timelessness of truth thrust itself powerfully into the present writer's meditations one evening in a land of steaming jungles and dense forests, where forgotten Indian sages had carried their culture long ago. He sat amid the vast deserted ruins of ancient Angkor, in Cambodian Indochina, and watched the night lay siege to day and then waited for the stars to rise outside its largest temple, so large that the enclosing wall was nearly 2.5 miles in perimeter. Here and there the great building was ominously cracked, mutilated statues of Ramayana's gods strewed the ground, lichen and creeper laced themselves around the panels of carved goddesses, thorns flourished thickly around him as advance guards of the invading jungle, lizards crawled blasphemously over the calm faces of fallen Buddhas, Bats coated the holy shrines with their nauseous excrement. The bright constellations of heaven gazed down on a scene of solemn desolation. Gone were the proud glories of the Khmer people, but the sacred truths taught by their sages still remained, though their lips were dumb and their bodies annihilated by time. Was it not wonderful that the immemorial wisdom of these men, who flourished and taught when Europe lay benighted in the Dark Age, could be known and studied today, and would be known and studied yet again when another 2 millenniums had once more passed over this planet? Out of the burial urn of the past, this same wisdom has been extricated. But because it has here been molded in an ultra-modern form to suit both our time and need, its authenticity or truth may not be plainly recognizable to its present-day Indian inheritors. Yet the hidden stretching beyond yoga, there is not a single important tenet here which cannot be found phrased in the old Sanskrit writings. We are only the inheritors and not the discoverers of this ever-ancient but ever-new law. Therefore the writer bends in homage before the Himalayan intelligence of those sages who, since untraceable antiquity, have kept truth alive. The INDEX, Index Urkaria, Sankara, Action, - Ammonius, Angka, Animals, Appearance, Art, - Asceticism, Ashtavakrasampita, Atiparamaswami, Attention, Arabindogos, Authoritarianism, - B. Bacon, Balzac, Beauty, Barclay, Bhagavad Gita, Bible, Body, Bohm, Brabourne, Lord, Brahmins, Brain, Brunton's Defense, - Buchman, Drive, Buckle, Buddha, Bunsen, See Calmness, Change, Charlatans, Chinese Technique, Color, Concentration, Consciousness, Carrot, Constructs, Copernicus, Council of Constantinople, Council of Nicaea, Credulity, Detachment, - Determination, Io, Doubt, Dream, Dying Man, Ecstasy, Eddington, Education, Ego, Einstein, - Emerson, Emotion, Epicurus, Ethics, - Euclid, Evil, Evolution, Existence, - Experience, Externality, - Effect, - Fate, Feeling, Index Fict, Fox, George, France, Anatole, Free Will, - G. Gandhi, Germany, God, Io, I. H. Haldane, Lord Hallage, Hallucination, Hegel, Heisenberg, Heredity, Hidden Teaching, Greater Than, .II, I. Huico, Hume, II, Idea, - Ignorance, Illusions, India, Inge, Dean, Insight, Intellect, Intuition, Inventions, J. Janaka, The King Sage, Genes, Jesus, K. Kant, Karma, Kitchener, Knowledge, L. Laughter, Leisure, Light, Lightning Flash, Logic, Lots, M. Macaulay, McMurray, Professor, Maharaja of Mysore, Maharishi, Man, Mandukya, Secret Doctrine, Matter, Maya, Meaning, - Meditation, No, Memory, - Mental Abstraction, Mental Constructs, Mentalism, - Metaphysics, Mind, Mind Splitting, Monks, Mozart, Muhammad, Mysticism and Mystics, No, - N Nations, Nerves, - New Testament, Newton's Law, Nicaea, Council of, Nietzsche, Nonviolence, Index, O, Marque Pound M, Origin, Over Self, P. Payne, Pantagely, Perception, - Percepts, Philosophy, - Physics, Physiology, Planck, Plotinus, Plutarch, Prayer, Psychoanalysis, Psychology, Pythagoras, Arjuna, Ramakrishna, Reality, Reason, - Rebirth, - Relativity, Religion, Greater Than Reverie, Röntgen, Russell, Bertrand, S. Sages, Sanskrit, Science, Greater Than, Self, Self-Improvement, Sensations, Senses, Shankara, The Sage, - Sight, - Sima, General, Sleep, Socrates, Solidity, Space, Spencer, Herbert, Sphinx, Spiritual, Standpoints, - Substance, - Swedenborg, T-Things, - Thinking, No, Time, Times, There, Trance, Transport, truth, you ultimate, degrees unconscious mind, unity, universe.